You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Paulie in the studio, and today I'm very excited to have the one and only Rob Caggiano of Volbeat joining me today. Man, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, man. Good to see you, too.
I want to get one thing out of the way first, and here's a big debate on the staff here. The pronunciation of the name, is it Volbeat or Volbeat?
I say Volbeat.
You say Volbeat. I say Volbeat, too. Lou Brutus says Volbeat because he says it's a combination of the words volume and beat. So he says,
well, that's basically it. But, yeah, I don't know. The way they say it in Europe, with the way they kind of spin the words, it comes across a little clearer than when I say it with my New York accent.
Yeah, we in New York, we just say it the way we want, and to hell with everybody else, right? So you guys are hitting the road with Metallica and Avenged Sevenfold. Tour kicks off May 10th, I believe. I mean, that's got to be really exciting for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, we're super excited. I can't wait, actually. You know, I've toured with those guys before, and, you know, they're absolutely phenomenal. It's amazing.
You were in Anthrax with the Big Four tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep. Yeah,
this is not a new experience for you. You get to hang with the guys in Metallica a lot, or just?
I mean on the Big Four tour we did. I hope we do, you know, on this one as well. You know, those guys are super cool, and you know they treat all the other bands, you know, the right way, and it's a class act. It's great.
I love to hear that. I mean, you know, when you're an act like Metallica, you know, I imagine it's very easy to just kind of, you know, get in, do your thing, and get out. But the fact that they, you know, hang out with you guys, is that makes me feel
good. They're super cool, and their new record is amazing too. I can't wait to hear those songs live every night.
Oh my god, yes. Talking about new songs, the new single for Volbeat right now is Black Rose.
Mm-hmm.
We're jamming it. It's a great song. It's a fun song, and it's got guest vocalist on it, Mr. Danko Jones.
Danko Jones, good friend of ours.
Yeah, man. Can you tell me how you guys hooked up with him for this?
You know, I think it's kind of something that was talked about for a while, you know, doing like a kind of collaboration with him. Like I said, he's a good friend of the band's, and, you know, we've done some touring with him. He's awesome. He's such a good dude. We love what he does. I mean, he's a great singer. And the bottom line is he fits perfectly on that song, you know, so it just made sense.
Yeah, he's got a great attitude. And, you know, I got to interview him a couple of years ago, and big Kiss fan, you know. He'll talk to me about Kiss all day long.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
He's just a music aficionado, full stop. You know, he really knows his stuff.
Yeah, he's a great dude. And if I will say, if anyone gets a chance to like sit down and talk to him, absolutely do it.
Yeah, he's totally.
This is like kind of a redundant thing to say with a lot of the work that you do, but there's a really killer solo in Black Rose I just love. And like, you know,
thank you.
You're like the solo guy. I mean, you always have these amazing, you know, progressions that you do. How do you, like, how long does it take you to, like, work on a solo, and how do you know when it's right? Like, when you can just leave it alone?
That's a good question. I like that. All right. Well, I mean, first off, every song is totally different for me. But one of the things I try to do, you know, with every solo that I'm working on or constructing, basically, I'm not one of those guitar players that works out every note before I go into the studio. As a matter of fact, I never work anything out because I like the spontaneity of it. Basically, I'll just play the track and jam to it like four or five times, and then I'll listen back to those takes and kind of, you know, it'll start taking shape in my mind. But one of the things I really try to do is make it have substance and melody. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, you could play as fast as you want, do all that crazy stuff, but if you don't remember it when the song's over, you missed the mark, you know? So that's one of the things I always try to do.
For the writing for this record, you handled a lot of the production for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when the writing for this album happened, was that, you know, Michael kind of coming in and he has these song ideas and just runs them by you and you're just riffing off of that? Because you said you don't do any kind of pre-work, so you don't have like a pocket full of riffs that you're coming into writing with?
Well, when I say I don't do any my solos are not premeditated. That's really what I'm not talking about songs or production stuff. I'm talking about what I'm playing during the solo. we actually spent quite a bit of time in the rehearsal room before recording this record, in a pre-production sense. So, on top of that, we actually demoed about four or five tracks, which is something the band never really did going into an album. So we had a really good idea of what we were doing when we got to the studio. Except for my solos.
There's a new bass player in the band as well. Do you know like how they found him, how they picked him up? Do the guys know him? Or?
Well, they had a history. I guess he actually played in the band years ago. I don't know the full story, but he did a European tour with Volbeat back in the day. Something happened with Anders. I don't know. There was for some reason he couldn't do the tour. I don't remember, but yeah, Casper's great. I mean, he's excited to be here, and you know, it's just working really well. So
just notice he has the same last name as John. They're not related, are they?
No, they're not related. It's like I don't think.
Larson, like the Smith of Denmark, maybe? I don't know.
It is actually a pretty common name in Denmark.
So they toured together, so pretty much there was already like that kind of chemistry with them, so like he was just a natural fit.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Exactly.
You've got some time off until May when this tour kicks off. How are you decompressing, or are you just keeping busy doing other stuff? What's going on?
Yeah, I've basically just been taking it easy. You know, having time off is something that I'm not used to at all. So, it feels good to be home. Feels good to be here in New York, and you know, just been kind of laying low, taking it easy, working on some new music, and yeah, just getting ready for this tour.
I always wonder, you know, because I see you do a lot of, do a lot of production work with other bands. You do a lot of collaborations. Mm-hmm. Are people like watching your schedule and waiting for you to get time off before they start calling you, like, "Hey, man, you want to work on something?"
No, it's not quite like that. But yeah, you know, like I said, having this these few months off was really good for me to kind of just recharge my batteries and get in that zone again. But I haven't really, you know, years ago I was really, you know, attacking the production thing and the collaboration thing, you know, full on when I had more time. You know, now it's like, you know, we're touring so much and the schedule is pretty intense. So
yeah, you just got back from Europe too, right?
Yeah, well, at the end of last year. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, you were on the road with, I think, was it Avenged? No.
No. Well, the last tour we did was a UK run with Alter Bridge.
Yes.
And Gojira. Yeah.
Oh, man, Gojira is freaking great.
They're killer.
They're hopping on for a few dates on the Metallica tour, too, I think,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Are you guys still on? Or, like, I think someone's dropping off and jumping on, or I forget what they're...
Yeah, we're dropping off. They're jumping on.
All right. you guys are doing a bunch of the U.S. festivals, too. You're doing Rock on the Range. You're doing Carolina Rebellion. Do you enjoy playing festival shows? I mean, is it a little easier or harder than playing, like, a normal touring gig?
I love playing festivals. You know, for us, I mean, Volbeat's always been, you know, the kind of band that it doesn't matter. You know, it was the same, actually, when I was with Anthrax. You know, luckily I've been in bands where it doesn't really matter how many people are in the room. We do what we do, and we give it, you know, 200% every night. And it's kind of, you know, it's the same philosophy with Volbeat. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of the festivals, or most of the festivals, we're headlining in Europe, so it kind of feels like our show anyway.
Yeah, you guys are going back to, I think you're doing, are you doing Wacken in Europe? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's another great one.
Yeah, that's a great metal festival.
Is there a difference between a European festival audience and a U.S. festival audience that you've noticed?
Difference? They might be a little more drunk over there, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I get it. You know, we get asked that question a lot, but, you know, the fans they're awesome worldwide, you know.
With a lot of the festivals these days, they're now these destination festivals, and I think the U.S. is kind of following the model that a lot of the European festivals have set, that it's, you know, it's a big stationary thing, and we've kind of off like the old touring festivals like Mayhem and Ozzfest and things like that in the past. Do you think that's just like something that won't come back, or would you like to see a touring festival kind of like pop up again for hard rock and heavy metal?
You know, that's an interesting question. You know, I've done a couple of those touring festivals, and it can be amazing. You know, it could be really great. With Anthrax, we did the Mayhem Fest, and that was a really fun experience. We loved it. I mean, it's interesting to see the U.S. kind of following in the footsteps of what Europe's been doing for years with these festivals. I mean, I've been saying it for a long time. Like, why don't we have these awesome festivals like they do in Europe? It doesn't make any sense. But I'm sure something will start happening again as far as the touring festival. I mean, Warped Tour is still going on, right?
Yes, it
so
is.
Stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
it works like this.
Yeah.
And that's like an insane endeavor because they have like 9 stages and like 30 bands. And
yeah, I've never done Warped Tour, but I mean, it sounds so crazy.
You know, they come out to Jones Beach every year now. Yeah. So I usually go out there to do press, and it's bonkers because you just can't see everything.
Cause yeah.
Always 5 bands playing at once.
Yeah, yeah. That's right smack in the middle of when it's 2,000 degrees every day, right?
Oh, yeah. That's like the one question I love to ask everyone. It's like, you know, how are you dealing with the heat? Because that's like a literal trial by fire for a lot of these bands. You know, it's their first big touring festival, and they're in a van, and it's like 90 degrees out, and it sucks. But they do it.
Yeah.
Because that's the business. That's the gigs. I want to talk a little more about your production and just like your background, because I read that you went to school.
Did I?
I believe that you did. But it's like, is that where you really kind of picked up your production skills, or did you just kind of learn it on your own?
No, I went to Berkeley in Boston. At that point in my life, I wasn't thinking of producing or recording. You know, I went there as a guitar player, and you know, truth be told, it's an amazing school. I never went to class, like literally never went to class. I tried it at first, and you know, the whole just sitting in a room, in a classroom, kind of learning about. And I, you know, at that point, I could already play. You know, I'm not really a music theory guy. You know, I don't really, you know, I play mostly by ear and my heart, basically. So half the time, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But it doesn't matter. I could still do all that stuff, I guess. But I don't know what it's called or, you know. But you know, one of the best things about that school for me was meeting other musicians and other guys that just wanted to play. So, you know, just being in that environment, you know, just being in those rehearsal rooms up there, you know, every night of the week with different guys playing and jamming, you know, my musicianship really jumped, you know, quite a few levels. You know, and as a guitar player, and you know, just being able to play with different drummers every night, you know, because every drummer has their own groove and their own clock, and just being able to work around that and kind of groove with that and adapt to it, that was huge for me, you know. So, yeah.
Would you recommend other players kind of just, you know, just like go at it and jam with as many people as possible to
absolutely
get a feel for it?
Absolutely, you know. But for me, it was really hard growing up finding other kids to jam with that were, you know, like-minded and really had the heart and were taking it seriously like I was. Because then, you know, if you're not playing with guys that are taking it seriously, and you're just kind of wasting your time and you're spinning your wheels, you know. So that was the greatest thing for me going to a school like that, you know, just meeting other guys and jamming and stuff. But no, like as far as producing records, that's just a skill I kind of developed on my own, you know. And it's I kind of approach it the same way I approach the guitar, you know. I just kind of, you know, I have an ear for certain things, and I know what I want stuff to sound like, and I know how I want it to be performed and played, and I'm just, I go after it, and I don't settle for anything, you know.
How much time do you spend, you know, like, fiddling with knobs to get, like, the right tone that you're looking for?
You're asking some really good questions. I like
Thank
this.
You.
All right, so my main philosophy in the recording studio versus, you know, I guess a lot of other guys, a lot of other engineers, and I see it a lot with younger guys too, just, you know, they study the art of audio and audio mixing and recording and all that stuff, and you know, the first thing they'll do is they'll reach for the EQ and twist the knobs, you know, and just kind of try to get at it like that, you know, if the sound isn't right. What I do is I always try to get the source right. So I'll move the microphone, or I'll change the drum head, or I'll change the guitar amp, or I'll change the guitar player. You know what I mean? If the source isn't right, you know, then you're screwed. No matter what you do, it's not going to be right. So I use my EQing is like, you know, just getting the source right, changing the microphone, changing the mic pre, changing the actual instrument. Like I said, you know, if the snare drum isn't sounding right for the song, change the drum, change the head, tune it differently. You know what I mean? Rather than, you know, run it through a different, you know, a million different knobs and EQs and plugins or this and that. It's just that stuff doesn't really make sense to me, because then you don't really know what you got. You know, especially at the end of the day, if someone else is going to mix your record, If you have all these plugins and all this crazy stuff on your tracks, you don't really know what the essence of the tracks are. You know what I mean? So when someone else opens it up, you know.
It's funny because, you know, coming from a live broadcast background for me, a lot of what you're saying really hits home because, you know, it doesn't matter if your signal, you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you have a garbage signal in the first place, you know, you can tweak it as much as you want. It's still not going to sound great if you're just doing it right from the input.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense to me, too.
Yeah, I record a very, very minimal EQ and compression. You know, I try to always go as flat as possible, make the source sounds, you know, amazing, as you know, as good as they can possibly be, and then you're in a good spot, because when you go to mix or someone else opens the tracks up and goes to mix, you know, they're starting from a really good place, you know.
How many guitars do you own?
Not as many as you might think, I guess. Probably 15 or 20, I guess. Although I do keep finding guitars that I forgot about over the years.
Finding?
Yeah, like I found a guitar in my storage room the other day that I just literally don't even remember ever getting or owning or anything. It's weird. It's like someone just put it there.
How many do you like to bring on the road with you?
I usually bring about four on the road, and it's, you know, I'm exclusively playing my signature model with ESP. We actually just released an updated, revised version of that guitar, and I'm pretty excited about that. So yeah. I'm going to be bringing those guys on the road, and yeah, I was never really into collecting guitars. I can appreciate a really nice vintage guitar, like an old Strat or an old Tele and stuff like that, but it's not something I ever got into. But it's not too late. I probably will get into it at some point.
They always like find a guitar-shaped space on your wall and stick another one there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think my favorite guitar of yours is the purple People Eater guitar.
Yeah, well, that's my signature model. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, when you went into like designing that for ESP, you know, mm-hmm. what were you focused on, you know, making right about that model?
Well, the backstory behind that guitar is in like 1996. I called up ESP. I spoke to Matt, the president, super cool dude, and he basically sent me out a guitar. It was just, you know, I guess whatever they had in stock at the time. It was just a standard Horizon, which is one of the, you know, that's kind of like the ESP staple model, you know. And it was purple. I never liked purple. It was never my thing. I don't know, but I loved this guitar. You know, it just played. It had this magic. It just played so well, and it sounded great. It recorded really well. And it became my main guitar. You know, I toured all over the world countless times with Anthrax, you know, playing that guitar, and I just loved it. So fast forward all these years that, you know, when they talked to me about doing, you know, releasing a signature model, basically I wanted to recreate that guitar, and I had some tweaks and some ideas that I wanted to add to it. And the interesting thing is, you know, throughout the years, ESP, you know, they still to this day make a quote-unquote Horizon model. But it's completely different than my guitar. It's like the neck shape is different, the body, the contours are a little bit different, where the electronics are, it's different, the headstock's different. It's an entirely different guitar. So, and the reason being, I guess, over the years, ESP changed their factories, and it's, you know, different machines, different people making them, you know. So what I needed to do is I took my old original guitar that they sent me, and I sent it to Japan, and they recreated it. And, you know, with my tweaks. So I have, like, glow-in-the-dark fret markers on the side of the neck, which is huge for me. And that's an idea I had just from playing with Anthrax all those years in Europe. You know, a lot of these places, you know, Anthrax has always been the kind of band where, you know, in between the songs it goes totally dark. And then a lot of times you gotta just jump back on to the next song. And I couldn't see what I was doing. I couldn't see where I was on the neck. So sometimes... So that was an idea I had, and ESP definitely nailed that for this new guitar. And another thing is the strap buttons are indented, so they'll never get loose, you know, no matter what you do, which is a really cool, useful thing. What else is there? Got my signature pickup, DiMarzio pickup, in the bridge. Yeah. So, I mean, overall, it's a killer guitar. It sounds amazing. I love playing it.
Thank you. I want to talk about a little more about Volbeat music. Do you have, you know, the album's been out for 9 months now, mm-hmm. Seal the Deal and Let's Boogie. Do you have a favorite song to play off that album to play live?
Oh, I mean, I love Devil's Bleeding Crown. I love playing Black Rose. I love the title track, too. Seal the Deal and Let's Boogie. That's a fun one. I get to really kind of go off on that one. That's a really cool tune to jam live. I mean, they're all fun. So far, we've played quite a few of them live, and they all work great. So,
Volbeat also has a great history of doing covers and like doing them really well. You know, like there's two on this album, Battleship Chains and Rebound. And you know, you work a lot of covers into your live set as well. What is the process for, you know, for picking a song? Because there are some songs that have just been like, you know, beaten to death for covers, and it's like, I'm pretty sure you don't want to, you know, walk over ground that's already been tread so much. Mm-hmm. So you know, how does the idea for a cover usually pop up in a writing process?
The interesting thing is, going into this record, we were what the original plan was as far as covers. We were really going to do a Motorhead song, like a Lemmy tribute. And we actually we started working on one of the newer Motorhead tracks. Sky Comes Calling for Me, I think is the name of it, something like that. It's a great song. When we went into the studio, our friend from Teenage Bottle Rocket passed away, and that's a band that's really close to us, and you know, we took those guys on the road, and you know, that song Rebound is I think it's a phenomenal song. The lyrics are great. It's really funny. It's really catchy. And we basically decided, oh, let's cover this track, you know, let's do a tribute to that dude and you know, a shout out to the band. And you know, we recorded it basically on the spot, and it came out great. So it ended up on the record. So that was really unplanned and unforeseen, you know. Same thing with Battleship Chains, actually. You know, Michael came in with that song, and he's like, what do you guys think about doing this song? And I mean, it's a great track. Super simple. I think there's only two chords in the whole song. It's one of those songs that's kind of like deceptive in that sense. But it didn't take much to learn it. Like I said, there's only two chords, and we banged it out in about an hour. So, and that was it. And it came out great. Again, Michael sounds great singing it, and it ended up on the album. So that's kind of how it happened for this one.
So was Michael the one who wanted to just like came in with Battleship Chains, or did somebody else suggest it? Or, I mean,
he came in with that, kind of in the 11th hour. I mean, like I said, it wasn't planned or anything. It's just I don't even know where he heard it from or how he got into that song, but yeah.
The Rebound story is great, and you know, that's such a great tribute to do for somebody.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Are you playing that one live or?
No. We have played it live, and it goes over great.
Good.
Yeah.
I've read in several interviews that you actually still buy music.
I do, although I'm doing it less than I used to. Sad to say, I guess. But, yeah.
Where I'm going with this is that I want to know, you know, how do you get turned on to like new music?
Honestly, you know, I've been doing the streaming thing lately, and I've been holding off for a while. You know, I never got into Spotify. Reason being, well, two reasons. Obviously, that you know, the artists don't get paid correctly, and I don't like the way it sounds. But I've been getting into Tidal,
really,
which is high definition streaming, and I pay a little more. It's like, I guess, $30 a month or whatever, but it sounds great, and I don't have to lug around bags of CDs with me. You know, at the end of a tour, it's like, you know, I buy enough stuff, you know, on the road. I don't need to be lugging CDs home. You know, I'm always like shipping boxes of stuff home because I can't fit them in my suitcase. You know, whatever. But so in that sense, it's great. But it's also turned me on to so many new bands and so many new artists that I never would have come across. You know, and it, you know, if it's something I really love, I'm gonna go to the store and buy it. You know, just because I want the artwork. I want to hold it. I want to see the lyrics. I want to know who worked on it. You know, I want to get into it. So I still do buy records, and I still buy CDs, and I don't buy vinyl because I don't have a vinyl player. But it's on my list. I gotta get a vinyl setup.
I actually own several sort of vinyl albums myself, and I also don't own a record player. So mm-hmm. I just I have them to look at, and was like, one of these days I'll buy one and be able to listen to this.
Yeah,
I usually have them on CD as well, but I wanted, like, you know, the album, the big.
Yeah, I like CD. I prefer the way vinyl sounds, actually, but I just don't have that set up right now.
Do you recall the last album you bought?
Last album I bought. Who? Actually, it's a band called Party Supplies. It's not a metal record. It's not a rock. It's this songwriting duo from New York, actually, and it's electronic, but it's definitely got a rock vibe to it. I can't explain what it is. It's really great though. The songs are great. Yeah, it's on Fool's Gold Records, which is a New York record company. Yeah.
Do you have any advice for the budding guitar heroes listening to this interview?
Stay in school.
Go to class if you go to Berkeley.
Go to class. I don't know. I mean, everybody's situation is different. You know, if you want to do music, you know, for your career and for your, you know, if that's really what you want to do, you have to just make sure you're that type of person, because not everyone can do this. It's got to be in your heart, you know. And, you know, if that's the way it is for me, I have no choice but to do music. I literally have no choice. That's what I am. It's what I do. It's what I, you know, live and breathe. So, and if you're that type of person, then this will suit you well. You know, it's not easy. It's not a lot of people think, oh yeah, I'm going to pick up a guitar and, you know, I'm going to be rich and famous and get all the groupies and whatever they think. It's really not like that. You know, you got to really bust your ass and put a lot of hard work and blood, sweat, and tears into this and love. And if you love what you do, it all makes sense. So,
in these interviews, I used to ask a question like, you know, if you weren't playing music, what else would you be doing? But I got so many answers that were just like, I would only be playing music. I can't imagine doing myself anything else. There was like no point in asking it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, the only other thing I could maybe see, if I wasn't a musician, I'd be some kind of writer. You know, I love reading books. I'd be some kind of author. I don't know. I have no idea.
What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? I'm actually not reading a book right now.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Do you remember the last thing you enjoyed reading?
The last thing I enjoyed reading, let's see. I read a book called The Loney, which is really weird, dark, kind of strange book.
what kind of books attract you? Like, do you have a certain genre that you adhere to, or do you like, you know?
Yeah, I tend to be, you know, it's the same with movies, I guess, too. I like darker movies. I like dark books. One of my favorite books of all time is called House of Leaves by Mark Danielewski. It's an amazing book. Total head trip.
Yeah, I love a good book. You know, my mom had all the Stephen King books when I was growing up, so I wrote all.
Yeah,
I read all those Stephen King books.
We just played, sort of recently. We played in Bangor, Maine, where he lives, and I went into this bookstore and they had this little mom and pop bookstore, and they had a Stephen King sale. So I literally bought every book he's ever written. One of my favorite books by him is he has a book called On Writing, and it's basically his. It's just him talking about how he approaches writing. You know, and it's amazing. Even if you're not trying to be an author, it's just any kind of artistic, you know, whatever you do, I think you can appreciate that book. It's an amazing book.
Good.
Yeah.
We always like to ask the artists who come in, you know, for the touring horror stories or the Spinal Tapian moments, as it were. You know, what's do you have a story where, you know, everything went wrong or you got lost backstage? Or
I get lost backstage pretty much every day. So it does, for me, it's not even a Spinal Tap moment anymore. It's just me.
And lastly, for Volbeat as a band, you know, a lot of bands, when they're touring, they're also just kind of like fiddling around on the road writing. Are you guys, you know, writing music as you're doing anything right now? Is any writing going on?
We tend to dabble with some ideas on the road. You know, I've been home for a few months. So I've been putting some new song ideas together, whether it's for Volbeat or something else, I don't know yet. But yeah, I just love creating. I love coming up with new stuff and jamming new stuff. So, and you know, I know obviously Michael's the same way. He's always coming up with new ideas and new things to work on. So, yeah.
Good. All right. Well, Rob Caggiano, Volbeat, thank you so much for taking this time to talk with us, man. It was an absolute pleasure.
Likewise. Thanks for having me, man.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.